From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. California's congressional delegation is getting an earful from constituents this year, especially when any of them come back to town for town hall meetings. Capital Public Radio's Ben Adler was in Washington, D.C. this week and made a stop on Capitol Hill. In this week's Capitol Chat, Ben debriefs us from our Capitol Bureau in Sacramento. Hi, Ben.
Good morning.
You had a late night of flying back across the country, didn't you?
There are days I'm glad I work in radio. Let's put it that way.
I do want to get to the Washington, D.C. visit, but I think we should start with some numbers that were just released. We have unemployment figures for California, right?
We do. 19,000 new jobs added by California in March, and the unemployment rate continues to drop bit by bit by bit. Started the year at 5.1% in January, now down to 4.9%. One thing to temper that with, however, is that the civilian labor force is essentially unchanged. So while unemployment is dropping, the fact that the labor force is only up a few thousand from the start of the year to now could mean that some of this is just folks leaving the workforce, not looking for work.
All right. Any details on the sectors where those 19,000 jobs were?
I don't have that right in front of me. I do have Sacramento stats,
okay,
though.
So
the Sacramento region's unemployment rate was 5% in March. That's not seasonally adjusted. So the best comparison is a year ago, it was 5.6%. So a significant drop. 5,500 new jobs over the last month, but again, not seasonally adjusted. And I just want to show you the unemployment rate for the four counties in the region and how they range. The lowest unemployment is in Placer County, 4.2%. Then it's 4.8% in El Dorado, 5.1% in Sacramento, and 6% in Yolo County. So a pretty wide range over that four-county region. The largest increase of jobs came in government over the last month, particularly local government. Do I have the drop? I think I have the drop here. The biggest drop came, let's see, manufacturing was the biggest.
Okay, I would have guessed government or construction in this area to be the area of strength for jobs.
That's
where some of the growth has been. Okay, sorry to not spend more time there, but I do want to transition to your trip to Washington, D.C. You were actually there for other reasons, but you did manage to connect with, as I said, California's House Republicans, or at least their staff members, correct?
Yes, I was already there for a public radio board meeting, and it was spring break for Congress, and so the members weren't there, but the staff were, and they had a little more time to talk, a little more leisurely time. And so it was nice to kind of just go to a few offices. And I should say I focused my visits on California's Republican members of Congress, because what I have been interested in and kind of fascinated by is just how different blue California and red Washington are for, you know, not just the messages coming out of it, the politics, but just the feel of the two. And they are so far apart right now. Certainly the country is split, and Washington, D.C., the people who live there, heavily Democratic, and a lot of the folks who live immediately around Washington, D.C., Maryland and Virginia, fairly Democratic too. But as far as who's in charge and the mood, how folks feel, it's diametrically opposite.
So we'll use that as a backdrop. Who did you meet? Where did you meet? And what was the goal of the conversations?
Well, you know, my conversations weren't on record, so I'm just going to say that, I will say I met with House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy's office, and then I met with a handful of other Republican members, including a couple from our area as well, but just from throughout California. And, you know, a lot of the things that came up, you know, they want to know what California's going to do with the Sanctuary State Bill, SB 54, from Senate President Pro Tem Kevin DeLeon. We're here in California interested in what Congress is going to do about health care and immigration. So that those topics pretty much dominated the conversation. You know, some of the offices I spoke with, you know, the members of Congress probably have challenging reelection bids next fall. But that all depends on who turns out to vote, as we've seen in California and throughout the country. Voters that stay home can disproportionately influence the results of the election, whether it's Democrats or left-leaning independents staying home in 2016 or you know, Democrats staying home in 2014 in the midterms, or Republicans not turning out as much, or a lot of the folks who came out to vote for Donald Trump who don't typically vote. Maybe had they come out in previous elections, Republicans would have done better than previous presidential elections, I should say. Republicans might have done better than they did.
Well, over the past week, that special election happened in Georgia. So there was a surge of excitement for the Democrats after the Democrat got the most votes heading to the primary that will happen this summer. So you're talking to the staffs of California Republicans. Did they talk about that special election, and did you get reaction from them?
I mean, we talked a little bit about it, but it wasn't the dominating story. It's worth pointing out, and, you know, obviously, national politics isn't my beat, so I know what I read. But based on what I read, it's far from sure that Democrats are going to win that Georgia seat in the runoff, because there were many Republican candidates and only one major Democratic candidate, and now it's going to be one on one in a district that did vote for Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton, if narrowly. Democrats appear to be gaining in that district compared to previous elections, but, you know, the Democrat did get less than 50%. And so I think a Democrat would say, look, we've got a shot, but really what we see in the Kansas special election for Congress and the Georgia one is Democrats are more energized and turning out more than they typically would. But these are not the districts that necessarily Democrats would be focusing on to win control of the House. Republicans would say Donald Trump is president and we're still winning these seats. So it's up to you whose spin you believe.
But for somebody like Daryl Issa from California, where the momentum is going and what the voters are feeling, seeing, thinking could dramatically change his future as a politician and what happens in that district.
Oh, for sure. And that district in Southern Orange County, Northern San Diego County on the coast was not seen as being competitive at the start of the previous election cycle. And then the Democratic challenger came shockingly close in the primary, and Democrats invested a bit in the general, and it was close. But Issa pulled it out. It was one of the closer House races in the country. And Issa is going to be running again, and he's going to have a tough race again. Other Democrats who are going to see tough races, Jeff Denham and David Valadao in the Central Valley. And we see Democrats targeting also Steve Knight in the Santa Clarita area, just north, Antelope Valley area, just north of Los Angeles, around the Grapevine. And then Democrats are targeting other members of Congress in Orange County because Orange County went for Hillary Clinton. Orange County, not known as a Democratic county, went blue last election. I'm not convinced that it would have gone for Hillary Clinton had there been a more traditional, conventional Republican candidate. My sense is that Trump's biggest base of support in California and his base, I don't believe has left him so far, even in blue California, is more inland and rural, whereas Orange County is suburban. And yes, the demographics are changing to some extent, and it is perhaps getting more Democratic, but I'm not convinced that, you know, a Marco Rubio would have also lost Orange County to Hillary Clinton last fall. My hunch is he probably would have won.
Did you happen to see this article by Public Policy Polling about a recent poll? It does address what you're talking about, that Democrats have enthusiasm for 2018, whether or not that translates to reality.
I did not see that one. I believe it's a Democratic polling firm, but I think their point is well taken. You saw how Republicans got very energized early in President Obama's administration and remained energized to the point that in the midterms, that energy helped them do fairly well, whereas Democrats don't turn out in midterms or have not typically. The last time Democrats turned out strong in midterms, it was 2006. George W. Bush had been president for 6 years, and Democrats were able to retake control of the House and Senate, and they held it for the House for 4 years. They shed all their control in the House in 2010, and then they held on to the Senate a few years later, but then they lost that in 2014.
Well, one thing that's interesting about this, the headline is Democrats have big enthusiasm for 2018, but when you read down to the numbers, 63% of the Democrats who were polled say they're very excited about voting in the 2018 election, But 52% of Republicans expressed that sentiment. So both groups are over 50%. It I think, reflects a big engagement in the process and a desire to be part of those midterm elections. And that could have been the headline, I think.
Yeah. And a couple of thoughts on that. One is that, President Trump's base is highly energized and they are active and they volunteer and they will make calls if the president activates them to do so. Even here in California, there remains to this day a volunteer list of 300,000 people who I'm told made 1.5 million calls into swing states last fall. I'm sure some of that paid off in states like Wisconsin and Michigan and in Pennsylvania. So there's that. There's also the fact that in midterms, Democrats historically don't turn out as well as Republicans, like I said. And then finally, I think Democrats turned out to vote in, I haven't, crunched the numbers and people far smarter than me have, but my sense of it is it's not that Hillary Clinton didn't win the longtime Democrats other than the Reagan Republican Democrats who crossed over for Trump, but it's the folks who are the left-leaning independents or maybe folks in California who registered as Democrat to vote in the primary and in other states registered as Democrat to vote in the primary for Bernie Sanders. My hunch is that many of those Democrats or those voters are the ones that stayed home. And so the question is, will they turn out to vote? It's not clear that they are thrilled with how the Democratic Party is challenging Trump right now. And I think an example is Dianne Feinstein, who the U.S. senator, the longtime U.S. senator of California, held a couple of town halls this week, and she came under criticism from the left for not doing more to oppose Trump and for not backing single-payer health care in California.
You're listening to Ben Adler. He's just back from Washington, D.C., and he's joining me today from our Capitol Bureau in Sacramento. Let me go down through a list of a couple items and just get some quick responses from you, Ben.
Sure.
There was news yesterday of what some people are calling a breakthrough in a new health care plan, and the president talked about it. So you were out there. What was the buzz and reaction there?
Yeah. It reminded me a little bit of how last fall the Democrats in the California legislature and Governor Brown were said they were unable to get the next big climate change bill through, and they called it off. And then with everything quiet behind the scenes, they worked. They found a way to get the bill through. And I can't help but think that maybe something similar is happening in Washington, D.C. However, I'm pretty confident, based on what I read and some of my own reporting, that the House Republicans are not there yet in getting the votes. This breakthrough that is being talked about, it appears to be dealing with getting some buy-in from the Freedom Caucus. And although there's one member of a moderate caucus called the Tuesday Group that is quoted in stories as saying that they're in on the deal or that they're good with it or something like that, it's not clear that he's bringing his caucus of moderate Republicans along. And based on my reporting, I don't think moderate Republicans are ready to vote for it. And so I don't think the votes are there. Nor does NPR's reporting team, as I was listening to them, watching them tape the NPR Politics podcast yesterday at the mothership. The sense of the people who do this for a living is that it's not there yet.
The votes aren't there to pass the House.
Yet. Okay. But that could change. And there's no language yet. Everyone's on recess. Next week, you have the 100-day mark, and you've got a potential government shutdown if funding isn't approved. And so what happens first?
Back to some California news and politics. The California Chamber of Commerce released a list of job-killing bills. It's a really long list, Ben.
It usually is in California. There, especially early in the year, you've got a lot of bills that the business community feels would be very harmful to the business climate. And some of these are bills that we've seen before, like the expansion of job-protected family leave for new parents to take time off. And that's a bill that the chamber has successfully fought off a couple of times, including getting a veto from Governor Brown last year. And Governor Brown certainly has been willing to sign bills that have not been the favorite of the business community, but he tends to do his whole paddle a bit to the left, paddle a bit to the right. It's interesting that any targeted tax increase on a specific industry got the job killer label. whether that's a tax on high earners or the soda tax,
right,
or even the diaper and tampon sales tax exemption that, because the governor vetoed it last year because there wasn't an offsetting revenue source and it would have cost the state general fund money, the authors of the bill instead are trying to increase the excise tax on distilled spirits. And so that, the Cal Chamber feels, is a targeted tax on an industry and is on the job killer list.
You know, I'm going to amend what I said, because I count on this list, and it's 22, 23 bills, but the legislature passes 700 to 800 bills in a session. So 2023 as job killer bills probably isn't that long of a list, and in the context of things, it's pretty small.
And of the 700 to 800 or even more that get passed, there are hundreds more that are introduced that do not pass.
Yeah.
I should also mention, I left off one big one when I mentioned the list a few minutes minute ago. Single-payer health care is on that list.
Yes, and in fact, next week, one of the first committee votes comes up. I believe it's on Tuesday, and there will be a march, a lot of activity at the Capitol, and we're going to see an increase in communications from both sides on that one. One more thing to talk about next week is Sacramento's Cap to Cap trip. And I'm mentioning that because every year it's significant and it's a leadership opportunity for the people involved.
Yeah, you know, I kind of wish I was in D.C. next week and would be able to catch up with folks from the Sacramento region, but
right,
you know, travel schedule didn't work out that way. But yeah, I mean, it's Sacramento. It's the Sacramento region's time to lobby on the Hill. And, regions go through this each year, and sectors go through it each year. I think, you know, I saw the tech industry is descending on Washington sometime next week, so that'll be pretty busy. You know, and it's the same in Sacramento. You'll have local delegations that come up, and you'll have different interest groups and advocacy groups that come up and hold their lobbying days and meet with lawmakers and hold their rallies outside the Capitol. So, you know, in many ways, California's capital and America's capital are not so different, except, of course, for who's in charge.
And you get on a plane, Ben, and you can go back and forth in just a couple hours.
I wish it was just a couple hours. Yeah. I pity the California members of Congress who have the longest commute other than Hawaii and Alaska in
right,
the nation.
Well, thanks for joining us, getting up this morning for this week's Capital Chat. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Anytime.
That is Ben Adler. There's more state government news at capradio.org. You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio.